You're a bunch of fucking amateurs.
You're listening to Amateur Hour,
hosted by Ryan Scott Hall.
I am shit-faced.
And his dirtness.
I definitely am on Team Pod.
Welcome to the most fun,
least professional podcast in Chiefs Kingdom.
Visit us at ahpkc.com.
Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and iTunes under ahpkc.
Take it away, boys.
Welcome into Amateur Hour, folks. You got Ryan Scott Hall and his darkness.
What's up?
It's Nick at Night with Nick Wright. We're going to talk to Nick. Pretty excited. We haven't talked to him since what? Like first round of the NBA playoffs?
The real reason people listen to us.
Yeah, for sure. Each of our like seven highest rated shows revolve around the one and only at Get Nick Wright. Where we're going to start today, before we get Nick on the phone, however, is the brand new, really exciting AHPKC FanDuel Fantasy Football League.
Yeah, how you feeling after your narrow loss last night? You were in first. And then everybody had Carson Palmer somehow. And then you narrowly lost. And he threw a touchdown about, I don't know, 11 minutes left in the game, and that kind of iced it.
Yeah, I was really excited when Calvin Johnson had, like, the biggest first quarter in NFL history And then he didn't really do anything after that. And so I was only up, I think it was up like 11 points or 12 points when the game started, and there were like three guys that had Carson Palmer playing. So I went from winning $30 to winning $10. But I love this FanDuel
thing. I'm going to love it if the Chiefs continue to be this bad, that's for sure. That is for sure. It gives me a reason to watch on Sundays. At least more reasons to watch.
The advantage of it, I think, is that you get to pretty much throw away your lineup every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And even if your lineup is good one week, that doesn't mean that you want to keep all of those same guys the following week. Like, it's all about matchups and you know, kind of riding the hot hand in some situations and stuff. And
I think I'm going to purposely pick a player on Sunday and Monday nights just so I can have someone to watch specifically in those games. Just like...
Oh, yeah. it's exciting like that. We were able to fill all 15 spots this week. I think that initially we were planning on having 20. And keep in mind that every single week, like, people are going to get shuffled in and out. When you commit, you're only committing for 1 week. You're not committing
only $5
for an entire season.
It's only $5.
Yeah, it's $5. And we can kind of like... We have a bunch of different options. We can rotate through, like, if the top five gets paid out, or the top three, or we can do, like, 1 week where it's, you know, winner take all, and, you know, there's a bunch of different options. It's really cool.
Just make sure you use the promo code AHPKC if you're new.
Yeah, and if you're not new, it doesn't matter. But if you are new, and you use that promo code, we get money for it.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's cool.
But so both Ryan and I cashed last week, so bring it.
Yeah,
bring it.
We both ended up winning. We talked shit all week long about how we're better than you guys, and we proved to be better than at least some of you guys.
Yeah.
What was the guy's name that ended up winning? Throw him a little shout out if you got it.
I will get on it. I believe it's Corey.
Yeah, something like that. Bumped up from like fourth or fifth up into first with the Carson Palmer play. And he said that he pulled Alex Smith last minute for Carson Palmer.
Corey Howerton. Shout out to him.
All right.
A loyal listener.
Good job, my man. Now we're going to talk to big-time friend of the show, cornerstone of the show, actually.
Been making the world a better place since we last talked.
Absolutely.
Hello?
There he is.
Nicholas.
Gentlemen, how I've missed you so much.
We've missed you.
It's duly noted. Nick, you said that your appearance this week was going to be 30 minutes of cursing and crying. Where do you want to start? Do you want to curse first or cry first?
Well, I mean, we could start with, and it's only going to be noisy for a second. I mean, I don't know. We could start with, how far back do we want to go? Do we want to go back to the absolutely indefensible fucking decision to not take Teddy Bridgewater in the first round which has kind of set up this entire season of failure that we're staring at. Do we want to start with the fact that the team, because they didn't take Teddy Bridgewater, was forced to give out, well, it wasn't forced, but idiotically decided to tie themselves to another slightly above average quarterback for, I don't know, the 20th consecutive year of my life? Like, do we want to start with the fact that we really don't know if John Dorsey knows what he's doing? Or the fact that evidently Jamal Charles has gone into the office of every coach he's ever had in the pros and said, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm fucking your wife. Deal with it. And because of that, they've refused to give him the ball. Like, we can, I mean, I feel like I've cursed a lot already. We can start wherever you want, but I'm already depressed.
Well...
That didn't take long.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right, let's...
Welcome to Kansas City.
Rather than going all the way back as far as the draft, we've done our best to try to get over that, even though the NFL season itself is just now starting.
I am in no way over that.
Well, I'm,
no
I'm,
way.
Not, I'm not saying that we are over it, but we're trying.
Nah.
So, Alex Smith signs what looks like, at least in a couple years, as far as what most people are thinking, once... The young quarterbacks, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, whatever. When those guys get extensions, this Alex Smith contract is going to put him right around where most people think he should be, somewhere between 12th and 18th highest paid quarterback in the NFL. But it also doesn't really look like the Chiefs can get out of the contract for at least 3 to 4 seasons without it looking really, really bad.
Well, they can't listen. They. If he is on the roster in March, he's your quarterback for this year and the next 2 years minimum. I mean, that's just a fact of the deal. Like, that money becomes fully guaranteed, what, $44 million? Fully guaranteed once March rolls around. And that's just an indefensible move. Like, there is no way to soft pedal it. There's no way to explain it. There is no way to make that okay. That is an indefensible way to run your football team. And if people are like, oh, you got to save the franchise tag for Justin Houston, that is so absurd. If you weren't spending this stupid money on Alex Smith, you could have re-signed Justin Houston, and then your best-case scenario is your worst-case scenario, right? Best-case scenario, Alex Smith plays out of his mind, and you franchise him. But you are talking about, yeah, in 3 or 4 years, you'll be the 12th or 15th highest paid quarterback in football. In 3 or 4 years, Alex Smith is going to suck. You signed the guy.
It's like
someone says to you, you're looking at a stock, and they say, hey, this stock's been on the market for 8 years. It, for the majority of those 8 years, has been a $5 stock. A couple years ago, it jumped to a $10 stock. But right now, this moment, it's a $22 stock. It's never been higher. Let's buy, buy, buy. That's not how it works. Alex Smith just played the best game he will ever play in his life. And that's when they gave him the contract extension. And by the way, he threw 7 picks last year, right? Do I have that correct?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
How many did he throw Sunday?
3.
Okay, so maybe that 7 pick performance isn't fucking sustainable.
What's the worst part of it, Nick? Is it that we signed it a year early, or that we signed him at all?
Well, I am okay with rolling the dice to see if Alex Smith can put together back-to-back career years. And if he does, that's why you have the franchise tag. And this whole idea of, you can't ask your quarterback to play under the specter of the franchise tag. Why not? What's he going to do? Like, cry? I mean, is he not going to try as hard? Is he going to play worse? None of that makes sense. Like, the arguments for signing Alex Smith are all so feeble that you can knock them down as soon as they're presented to you. Like, what is the worst-case scenario? He plays great, and you have to franchise tag him. Okay, why can't you franchise tag your quarterback? Well, that's just something teams don't do. Well, typically because guys that are looking at the franchise tag are guys that you know are your long-term quarterback. Anyone that says they know Alex Smith's the long-term quarterback.
Oh.
Nick?
Hey, our first of the season.
May have lost him. I think where he was headed on that, it's any time that a quarterback is approaching getting a franchise tag, presumably the team knows whether he is or is not a franchise quarterback and would be worth that money. We've got Nick back here. Hey, buddy.
Hey, listen. I understand that Amateur Hour podcast Kansas City now has like corporate sponsors and doing FanDuel contests and all this shit. But if I'm going to be censored and hung up on when I'm in the middle of a great Alex Smith rant, our professional arrangement is going to come to an end.
We lost you, man.
Yeah, I know you lost me because you hung up on me because I was sitting so hot fire you couldn't handle it.
Oh.
I assume it was my fault because I'm driving through downtown Houston.
We're big time, Nick.
What was I saying?
Oh, something about Alex Smith.
You were basically kind of going at some of the arguments for signing Alex Smith and
franchising him.
Yeah, what it looked like was any team that has a quarterback approaching possibly getting franchised, the team is going to know pretty definitively whether or not he deserves getting that franchise tag, whether they want to invest in that. And it's he's either going to be your long-term quarterback or he's not. And it seemed like Alex Smith was in a pretty rare situation where the team didn't really know if they didn't know if they wanted to keep him or not. And maybe the team itself did, but I don't think anybody, for the most part, was truly convinced that Alex Smith was the best option for this team going forward. And I honestly, what it reeked of to me was Clark Hunt wanting some sense of stability after how bad everything went with Scott Pioli. And Alex Smith seemed like the safe choice from the very beginning. And rather than sacking up and drafting a quarterback, they decided to go and trade 2 second-rounders for Alex Smith in the first place. And then rather than entering this season with him on a 1-year deal and basically saying, prove that you deserve to be here, prove that you deserve to make this money, after one season that basically amounted to nothing other than another playoff loss for this franchise, they decided, well, he showed us enough. We're going to give him $45 million guaranteed.
Well, and I've never seen so many members of the media just falling all over themselves to say how happy they are for a guy. As if Alex Smith was some undrafted free agent turned good. I mean, I'm pretty sure Alex Smith had already earned over $50 million in his career. It's not like he was thirsting for this payday. And you mentioned Clark Hunt. Like, the common denominator in the Chiefs always striving to be good enough rather than to be great is the ownership. And you got my feelings on Clark Hunt are well documented, but this whole let's put our ceiling at 10-6, 11-5 if everything falls right, and then hey, the playoffs are wacky. The Giants beat the Patriots. The Ravens beat the Broncos. Like, who knows? It's just such a loser mentality.
Nick, There's been reports that the Chiefs could possibly get out of it after this year because it comes guaranteed like in March of 2015. But that would be a very, very bad look to give them all that extra money for God knows what reason. Do you think there's any chance they'd swallow their pride and take that out if this season is as disastrous as some people think it might be?
Well, I mean, I think it's less about it this season disastrous and more about how poorly does Alex Smith play. I suppose that is possible, but I mean, if they do that, they paid him $19 million for this year.
Yeah.
Like, that's, I mean, you're totally right. If they cut him before, I think it's March 5th, you're out of it, and all you did was tie up salary cap space, hurt yourself against the cap in the future, and pay played Alex Smith more than every other quarterback in football except for, I think, Tony Romo. So bully for you all, man.
Say the Chiefs decide, or I guess technically Alex Smith might decide for them based on his play, that they don't want to move forward with him after this season. If for some reason it really does go as badly as, say, week one did, and they end up with a top five pick and they're in a position to take a quarterback that can really be a cornerstone for this franchise for hopefully the next 10 to 15 years, if they decide that the best move is probably going that route, drafting a quarterback in the first round for the first time since Todd Blackledge in 1983, what kind of job security do you think that John Dorsey and Andy Reid have at that point? Because they decided to shell out all this money for Alex Smith when they didn't have to do it, and then get rid of that contract a year later.
Yeah, which is why, and this is, and then we can talk about the game. I mean, I know this is all off-season stuff, but what you just described is really the real dagger to your heart about this Alex Smith contract. Because there's no chance they move off him. Like, they are going to likely have a top 10 pick. It is supposedly going to be a quarterback-rich draft. And once again, they're going to not take one. Because, I don't know how much this would fall on Andy Reid. But for John Dorsey, I don't know how you can go to the notoriously cheap Clark Hunt and say, hey man, I just cost you $10 million I didn't have to. Like, I don't know how you can do that. So you've got to, assuming that Alex Smith is not, I mean, I don't think he's terrible. I want to make that clear. He's better than what we saw in week one. And we are already seeing these, with all due respect to my fellow Kansas Cityans, but for us, who are just copy and pasting the texts and tweets they sent me about Matt Castle and putting them in to Alex Smith's text. No one could succeed behind this offensive line. The wide receivers are terrible. Like, guys, that is a fair argument if you're playing a rookie quarterback. It's even a fair argument if you're playing Alex Smith on his old field. But when you pay Alex Smith what you paid him, be better. I mean, my 16-year-old son, who is not a football fan, big basketball fan, not a football fan, on DirecTV this year, there are those 30-minute game rewinds, which is just awesome. It's an NFL game rewind, but it's on DirecTV, and they play them just all day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, leading up to the game Thursday. And so you can watch every snap of the game in a half hour on your TV if you have the DirecTV thing to do a unpaid endorsement for them. And maybe you guys can catch them on as a sponsor.
You've been loving DirecTV, right?
I'm sorry?
You've been loving DirecTV lately, right?
Well, except for when it rains, yeah. but I'm trying to help you guys get more of that corporate sellout money.
We're big time.
But I say that as I am currently drawing paychecks from CBS and Comcast, NBC, Universal. You don't get more of a corporate sellout than me.
Yeah.
However, back to the point. I'm watching the game with my son, not, the most football-savvy person in the world. And we're watching it midway through the third quarter, and he turns to me and says, why is the Chiefs quarterback running so much? And part of that's because the offensive line sucks, and that is, on management. And part of it's because that's what comes natural to him. Like, it's too early in the season for my first irrational racial statement. But man, oh man, how differently Alex Smith would be perceived if you were black. Like, God, you're allowed to run around like you can't read defenses as long as you're Alex Smith. But oh boy, let EJ Manuel try that shit. And Pete Prisco will be on his ass, man. With some fierceness, but go ahead, son.
It's never too early for those kind of takes, Nick.
I know. And I know you guys particularly love him.
I highlighted a number of mistakes that I thought Andy Reid made in the game on Sunday. I just want to go through the things I highlighted. First, the pass before halftime. How closely were you watching the game? Were you able to tell? I mean, it was 38 seconds left. We were on our own 2-yard line with one timeout, and the Chiefs decide to suddenly they just let them air it out for no reason.
How closely was I watching the game? How dare you? As if I would not prepare for the Amateur Hour podcast. This is the debut performance of 2014, and I am locked and loaded, even though I'm driving in my car while I'm doing it. No, I watched it. It was absurd. It was sadly absurd. Run the ball!
Yeah.
Run the ball! And you don't have to give it to Jamal, because evidently he's on a pitch count, because hey, Jamal Charles is going to have the first 25-year career in NFL history. They're just going to stretch that sumbitch out. But I mean, give it to one of the dozen running backs on the team. Do it. Hey, line up, you bearded fullback. Or tight end. What was the plan there? What's the kicker's funny name? I shouldn't say funny name. That was a little racist of me. What's the kicker's name?
Cairo Santos.
Yeah. What was the hope? Do you get some type of like $10 million added to the salary cap if in the same half of the first game of the year your kicker hits both uprights and the crossbar? They're like, maybe if we can get this ball to the Titan 45 and line him up for a 62-yarder right in the middle of the field, he can dink it off the crossbar. I mean, hey, what are we doing?
Well,
what was the hope there?
He's the first Brazilian player. I think we're hoping to open up that pipeline.
And by the way, getting both upright is something, like, if that was a parlor trick, you'd get 2,000 to 1 on it. It's a hell of a thing. No, that's it. Okay, so yes, I agree with that Andy Reid complaint.
Okay, here's one that I don't think many people care about, probably because they turned off the game. But the Chiefs were down 16 on their own 15-yard line with 4 minutes left. And they decided...
And they might as well forfeit.
And they punted.
Might as well forfeit. Like, just kneel on the ball, if that's what you're going to do. Just do what happened in college football this weekend, where it was 7 minutes left, they just called the game to the Lightning. Like, just give up. If you are down 31 with 4 minutes left, and you want to punt, fine, I don't care. You're down two scores. Like, the game is not over. Like, I mean, if from that moment, well, I would say at that moment the Titans have a greater than 98% win expectancy, right?
Yep.
But it ain't over. You're down, like, if you're down 17 and you punt there, I might say, okay, fine. But you're down 16 points. What are you doing? Like, here's the thing that I'm learning about Andy Reid, and you guys know, I'm out on Andy Reid. Ever since the playoff game, I'm out on Andy Reid. I'm not coming back. There are a lot of things I'm sure Andy Reid's good at. Look, you know, relating to the players, you know, dressing up as a holiday Santa. There are a lot of things I'm sure Andy Reid is really, really elite at. In-game troubleshooting ain't one. Like, he botched fourth downs in the playoff game. He doesn't understand clock management. And punting with 4 minutes left in a two-score game is a wholly indefensible position.
That was, I mean, I understand the complaint on the particular punting situation, but it was 4th and 15 from your own 15-yard line, in fairness to Andy Reid.
Let me combat that for just a moment, and then we need to move on. If you punt there, the game's over. You lose. It's over. Good night. There are no BCS standings. Margin of victory doesn't matter. There is no downside to going for it. None. Because if you punt, you lose. If you go for it, you almost assuredly lose. But losing is the worst thing that can happen anyway. So, like, I just...
I hear you.
I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world, but I also just think it's an indefensible decision.
Speaking of indefensible decisions, there were a number of them personnel-wise, and I guess utilization of that personnel-wise on Sunday, that I just can't seem to wrap my mind around. I'm going to move from the bottom toward the top, as in least important to most important here as far as snap counts are concerned, but Albert Wilson, a guy that showed a lot during the preseason, somebody that we thought was probably going to hopefully get a chance to develop with this team, one snap on Sunday and it came on special teams, zero offensive snaps. Vance Walker, probably the biggest free agent signing for this team in the offseason. One snap. He recorded a sack on it, but
he destroyed
literally,
his man and got a sack on his one snap.
Yeah, one snap in the game. The first two draft picks that we selected this year, Dee Ford and Phillip Gaines, combined for all of 17 snaps.
I don't want them.
And 13 of those 17 came on special teams, but Dee Ford by himself only played 5 snaps all game. And then you start looking at guys like Travis Kelce, who we thought was going to be a major part of this offense, getting 18 offensive snaps. He was targeted 5 times in those 18 snaps, but 18 snaps the entire game? Are you fucking kidding me?
With Dwayne Bowe out.
And then you get up to a guy like Jamal Charles, who, yes, was on the field for 95% of the offensive snaps, but got 11 touches the entire game. And if you actually go through and look at the way that...
Hold on. It's worse than that. Because he got touches on the first 3 plays of the game.
Mm-hmm.
First 3 plays of the game were to Jamal. And then after that, I think he ran it. I think he ran it 7 total times, right?
Was yeah, he nine had or seven? 7 carries.
7 carries. Think about that. He gave the ball to Jamal 4 times after the first 3 plays of the game. I mean, they handed it to him. And maybe you could... You can't convince me that's the right call. Like, that is on its face, just not an opinion, a fact. That's a wrong call, and I think Andy Reid copped to it. But the worst part of it, to me, is it's not even like they're preserving his body. Because on the plays he's not getting the ball, they force this guy to chip blitzing linebackers every time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time I think Jamal... He's getting crushed on one of his shoulders by some guy. Hey, but Jamal Charles, in mine and every knowledgeable football fan's opinion, top 3 running back in the league, maybe the best. In no one's opinion is Jamal Charles a top 3 wide receiver in the league. So stop using him like this. Like, I'm fine with throwing him the ball. I'm fine with that being a part of the game plan. But they threw him the ball. Not that he caught it every time. They threw him the ball, I believe, the exact same amount of times as they handed him the ball. That is an abortion.
Something that really bothered me in general, we spoke with Joel Thorman on the post-game show and asked him about if Andy Reid had been questioned on why Jamal only got 11 touches in the game. And Andy said that it was something the Titans were doing that was preventing them from basically running the football. I assume that's just called playing defense, but what I didn't quite...
Yeah, well, that thing the Titans were doing, you call putting 11 guys out there. And you're like, damn.
Yeah.
Well, they come out with nine. Sorry,
yeah, yeah. I mean, what killed me, though, I went through and actually looked at the snaps. So, Alex had 35 pass attempts. He was sacked 4 times to take it up to 39. And he had 6 runs, so let's call it 45 dropbacks in the game, which leaves 11 more plays. We handed the ball off 11 times in this game to 45 pass attempts. Like... The game was never truly out of reach, and at one point, what was it, 20-3, I think, is where we were standing before the Chiefs scored again? 23-3. But, I mean, that was still with, like, 20-plus minutes left in the game. And something that we discussed on that post-game show is that Jamal Charles is the best player on this team. And frankly, handing the ball off to Jamaal Charles probably has a better success rate of long gains than Alex Smith throwing the ball deep. Like, we have a better shot of making a play and getting big chunks of yardage by handing it off than by Alex Smith throwing to the likes of Donnie Avery and Frankie Hammond.
Obviously.
It does not make any sense.
And Alex Smith has a better chance of success if the other team is expecting a run and afraid of the run. Here's when the other team is not expecting a run. When you have no goddamn running backs on the backfield. Like, you know it's going to be a pass for one of Alex Smith's chicken with his head cut off scramble when you're in the shotgun with a tight end, three wide receivers, and then Jamaal starts running out to the slot. They call plays as if they had the personnel of the Saints. The quarterback, the running back, the wide receivers, the tight end of the Saints. And instead, they have the opposite of that. So,
Nick, we've had our fair share of cursing. I think it's time to do a little bit of crying and talk about losing the heart and soul of the defense, and frankly, probably my favorite player in the history of the Chiefs, Derek Johnson. The only time in his career, I think, that we've dealt with him not being on the field was when Todd Haley benched him. And
Derek Johnson, question guy.
And he, you know, at that point, it kind of revitalized his career, and Derek Johnson quickly became one of the best inside linebackers in the league. And, as of right now, there's very few that can argue that they're better than him at his position. And going from having Derek Johnson to not really knowing what we're doing in the middle of this defense, I don't think whenever we had, most indispensable player on the team discussions that Derek Johnson ever really came up, because nobody ever assumed that he was going to get hurt. And now that he is, it's a very, very difficult reality to try and grasp that we don't have Derek Johnson in the middle of this defense for the next 15 games. Where do they start? What do you do to try to pick up the pieces defensively?
Yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, you don't have the personnel. I mean, they run a 3-4 defense, so you need a minimum of 4 inside linebackers, and they only had 1 to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to lie to you guys, during the offseason, I fall off a little bit, especially with the baby and the kids and everything, like the Chiefs. So, I started prepping, I suppose, for this Chiefs season a few weeks ago. And when I saw that Joe Mays is still on this team, I was aghast.
So he played in Houston last year, and you probably got a decent look at him. But as Chiefs fans, everybody got at least a small look at him when he was playing for Denver.
And he killed Tony Maiocchi.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say still in. You're right. I shouldn't have said still in Kansas City. But the fact that that's where they're at, because I've seen him as a player.
Did you see?
You know what I mean? Go ahead. Sorry.
Did you see the contract that they gave him?
I didn't look, because I assumed that Joe Mays was on a 1-year veteran's minimum deal.
Nope.
No, he got 2 years and $6 million. The thing that really was a head-scratcher about this for me, they went from having Akeem Jordan last year, who I thought, especially against the run, performed extremely well, well above expectations at the very least, and last year he was at the veteran minimum of $855,000. And they let him walk to bring in Joe Mays, who probably had a worse season than Akeem Jordan did last year, and we gave him more than 3 times what Akeem Jordan made last year. It's unfortunate that he ended up hurting his hand and he's out for basically minimum 8 weeks. I think the defense could use his attitude. He plays really hard. He's kind of a nasty player, if you will. But I don't know that it was an upgrade, and they paid him all that money. That never made any sense to me.
Well, here's what I don't understand. Where's all this money? like, I'm trying to look at the roster. Brandon Flowers is gone. Brandon Albert's gone. Jamal Charles got, like, you know, some new money, but he is still not that high paid. Where's all this money? How are the Chiefs not, how do they not have millions and millions under the cap? Like, I don't understand.
I mean, I know
they gave Chase Daniel, like, the most absurd backup quarterback contract in the history of the world. But that doesn't ruin your cap. Your left tackle is a rookie. That doesn't, I mean, a second-year player. I know he's the first overall pick, but that doesn't ruin your cap. You don't have your last two second-round picks for Alex Smith. That doesn't ruin your cap. As much as I hate the Alex Smith contract, that doesn't ruin your cap. Like, I got to do a deep dive on where all this money's going. Right now, what was your guys before week one? I apologize for not knowing this. What was each of your record predictions?
I had 6-10.
I picked 9-7. I wasn't like.
That's five of you.
You coming off that?
I wasn't like happy with that, but the more I've looked at the schedule, the more I thought the back half of the schedule. Were all very winnable games. The first five, or if you want to include week seven at San Diego off the bye, the first six games look really, really difficult. But the final 10 don't. I mean, you've got Denver and Seattle lumped in there, and then eight winnable games to me. Either way, I mean, I figured that worst case scenario was probably 6-10.
Where were you at, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is I mean, I said before the year, I mean, I bet the under, I think this is a 5 or 6 win team. I mean, you...
What do you think is the biggest contributing factor to that? Like, why did you think that we were only going to win six games? Was it schedule? Was it personnel?
And I gotta let you know, I'm here for a second. I'm driving to a school zone in Texas and near Florida.
You're fine. Anybody that's listened to this show before knows that when you drive through school zones, you have to go hands-free.
Yeah, why did I think that? Because you lost 3/5 of your starting offensive line and did not replace it. Because I believe that Alex Smith was not going to be able to recreate what he did last year. Because I saw nowhere on offense they got better, only places they got worse. Because, call me crazy, I think Brandon Flowers is a valuable player in this league, and I don't understand what they did with him.
Gotta pay Alex.
Right. And
we still have the money for Flowers after paying Alex Smith. It doesn't make any sense that they got rid of Brandon Flowers. That was
like the
most
egregious
thing. The
Brandon Flowers thing is one of the more perplexing moves I've ever seen.
I think that releasing Brandon Flowers is arguably as bad as signing Alex Smith right now. And I know
the only reason it's not as bad is because it won't, releasing Brandon Flowers won't long-term handcuff you.
True.
And the Alex Smith thing will. You know, like, I like that Philip Jenkins pick. I know evidently he's fallen out of favor, but, you know, he was the best player on that Rice team, and that's here in Houston, so maybe I have a, you know, locality bias. But I thought he's a good player, but he's not ready to come to play. And, you know, and I just looked at the team and I said they got no secondary, no offensive line, one wide receiver, and a mediocre quarterback. And they played the Broncos twice, who I think are going to be outstanding. The Chargers twice, who I think are going to be really good. And the NFC West, who, like all four of those teams, will just crush the Chiefs up front. And two of the four are really good. One's okay, and one's probably bad in St. Louis, but still the front four's going to hurt them. Like, I just, you know, to me, I was looking at the two Charger games, the two Bronco games, the four NFC West games. To me, that was like a block, six losses minimum. And then in the other eight games, I mean, to me, it's not hard to find four or five losses.
Nick, the schedule is definitely harder than last year. I mean, that was maybe the biggest reason I picked us to do worse this year, other than we got worse across the board. Are the Chiefs going to be? Okay.
Sorry about that, guys. I was way late getting home, and my babysitter's gonna get in trouble picking up her kids, and I'm a bad human being.
Ooh, can we listen to that?
I had to talk to her. I'm sorry?
Can we listen to that?
No, that's, no, you can't listen to that. But, so, right now, since my babysitter had to leave, I've got my baby with me, and she's quiet right now, but if she starts talking, then we'll cut this short.
Okay. Nick, are the Chiefs going to be 0-6 after the first six games? Do you know their first six games?
I know that this week they play at Denver, correct?
Yes.
All right, give me the next four.
At Miami?
Mm-hmm.
New England at home on Monday night, at San Francisco, then the bye week, and then at San Diego.
I mean, they can be 1-5.
that's brutal. The Tennessee game was like must win. That's kind of how we're all looking at it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, here's the thing. Like, if you can't beat the Titans at home, and you can't even be competitive, then what type of fool do I look like for picking them to beat anybody right now? I mean, but now the saving grace in anything is the Raiders are an abomination. I watched that entire game on the rewind because that's who Houston plays next. Like, Derek Carr maybe finished the game with decent numbers. That team had less than 100 yards of offense with 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I mean, Rex Ryan had one of the greatest football quotes I've ever heard when he said after the game, that should have been a rat kill. But penalty screwed him. Like, he was right. I don't know what a rat kill is, but that's what it should have been. That's what Rex Ryan said. He said, that game should have been a rat kill, but we let him hang into it because of penalties. And it's not like the Jets are a great team. So, I mean, it's hard to pick the Chiefs. Miami, we'll see. You know, Miami did just beat New England. And there are special things do happen sometimes at Arrowhead on Monday night, and Jamal Charles is still going to be the best player on the field in most games he plays. But, you know, do I have faith in this team that they can beat good teams? Absolutely not.
Nick, from a fan perspective, I know that we've been doing this show for a few years, and there are people that want to hear our amateur analysis coming from Darkness and myself, but from a fan perspective, trying to figure out how after only 1 week to not basically just mail this season in, do you have any advice for the listeners out there, or is it really just doom and gloom, we fucking suck, and basically we're done, the season's over? Because that's kind of what it sounds like.
Well, if it makes the listeners feel any better, I felt like this before the first game.
Okay.
It makes me feel better.
I mean, this is the off... Like, who on earth thought... First of all, everyone knows that 11-5 was a lot of good fortune involved.
Schedule.
Right?
Schedule.
Non-duplicatable special teams... A great year health-wise. I understand at the end of the year the guys got dinged up. Alex Smith playing the best year of his career. There were a lot of factors at play. Okay? If they would have just brought the same team back, just when you normalize for luck and schedule and my barking dog, that 11 wins probably becomes 8 or 9. When, instead of just bringing the same team back, in my eyes, you get worse. You don't, let me put it like this, you don't get better in a single spot on the field. Not a single spot did you get better. You can say, oh, they drafted D4. Well, yeah, but that's a spot where, if we're just comparing to what they did last year, You had Tom Ollie and Justin Houston with, like, transcendent season. So you're not going to be better because just in that future in time, Ollie, you're probably going to come back down to earth a little bit. So even with D4, you're not going to get better there in all likelihood.
And he's had a bad preseason.
Right. Exactly. Well, but you know, I mean, I'm talking about before we saw all that.
Yep.
The plan with the offensive line was an embarrassment. And I don't know what their plan at quarterback was. So what was the path to a good year? I just didn't see it. And, I mean, you guys know me. If I can find a reason to, I mean, I think some people think I'm a Chiefs hater. I can't tell you how many people tweet to me, fuck you, you're in Houston now. Like, whatever, man. This is my hometown team. I'll always love the Chiefs. But just for a little context, when the Chiefs won the division with Matt Castle, I was the only person in the world picking that. And that's not because I'm an oracle. It's because if there's ever any reason to possibly squint hard enough and be optimistic, I tried to do that with the Chiefs. I couldn't do it this year.
Nick, I have one more Chiefs-related question for you, and then if you have some time, I wanted to just ask you some random nonsense, because we haven't talked to you for a little while.
Until the baby starts screaming,
all right.
I got you guys for at least the next 10 minutes.
So, loosely related Chiefs question. To my understanding, you haven't been home, certainly not during football season, since you moved away. Having a show that starts...
I have not been to Kansas City since I drove to Houston in June of 2012. That's a fact.
That's insane.
So I understand how difficult it is for you to try to come to a game on a Sunday, even if it's a noon game, get to the airport, get home, still have to pay attention to Houston, and then wake up and have a show at 6 a.m. on Monday. What are the chances we can get you to come home for a game this year? Slim and imagine?
You know, here's the thing. The weekend of October 5th, look at the schedule. I'm pretty sure the Chiefs are on the road.
Yep.
Is that correct?
At San Francisco.
Okay. So I guess I can just reveal it here. Why tell my friends and family before I tell you guys? I am going to be in Kansas City October 3rd. That's a Friday. It also doubles as my 30th birthday. My baby, who you maybe can hear in the background, her first birthday is a few days later. So I'm going to be in town from Friday until Monday evening.
All right.
And that Friday, I think I'm doing something with my family for my birthday. Saturday, I think we're doing something for my baby's birthday. But I hope Friday evening, Saturday evening, and certainly Sunday during the day to get together with as many people as possible to watch football. And so I will be in Kansas City. It won't be for a home game. Now, I know the Royals are no fans of this podcast, but if the Royals are in a playoff game, that's at home. I will be there. And then, assuming it's not on Sunday, because playoff baseball is sweet, but it ain't the NFL week 5. And so I will be in Kansas City for the first time in 2.5 years here in a few weeks. Isn't it crazy I haven't been back?
It is crazy. Why?
A multitude of reasons. The initial reason was when you love a place as much as I love Kansas City, when you've lived there your whole life except college, and then you move somewhere that you've never been, like Houston, I didn't want there to be any, like, nostalgia, regret. I didn't want there to be any of that. And this is going to, I don't know how to say this without sounding pompous, and I don't mean to at all. But by the time I left Kansas City, I was, relatively speaking, a popular figure in Kansas City, and I am not that at all in Houston. It's a bigger city, and people hate me, so those two things combined. So, like, it would have been really hard for me to come back and visit and, you know, go to the Grand Balloon and have people say, oh, man, Nick, I loved your show, blah, 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 and then go to Houston where people are like, this pansy liberal pussy. And so, like, so he was just, there's that angle to it. And there's also the angle of, since I've been down here, I've gotten married. We had a baby. I work a lot. I mean, I do that national show that is no longer on the air in Kansas City, which breaks my heart. I do TV 2 or 3 days a week down here, and the morning radio show, it's just, and the one thing, to really talk about things I don't think people care about, when CBS offered me this job, the one thing that I did a complete failure of negotiating on was vacation time. And so I went from having a lot of vacation in my last contract at Kansas City to not nearly as much here in Houston, so it's just hard to get away.
I hear you. Nick, something I've always wondered, you mentioned this towards the end of last season, that you were going to host the roast of Jamal Charles. Did that ever happen?
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny to say that. So I actually got an email about that a few weeks ago. And it was supposed to be this past, like, May or something. And the email said they're hoping to do it next Munich. So I don't know if that's going to come into effect, but it has not happened yet.
Well, we'll be there if it happens, whether you like it or not.
Oh, if it happens, you guys are going to have first-class accommodations. And by first-class accommodations, I mean when you drive here on your own dime, I will make sure they let you into the roast.
And we can sleep on your couch?
Yeah, you know, I got 3 kids, and
That's totally fine. Nick, if I have to edit this out, I'll edit this out, but you had lunch with Daryl Morey today.
Oh, yeah, no, you don't have to edit that out. That's fine.
Topics of conversation, I imagine that maybe Danny Ferry came up. What the fuck is going on in Atlanta?
You know, I did have lunch with Daryl Morey. I can't say, he goes out for lunch with my co-host and I twice a year to shoot the shit and to kind of give us off-the-record background information. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the whole, hold on, my baby deal. Hold on, quiet, Anna. Come here. Anna, say hi. She's waving. She doesn't understand the say part. She just waves. If you just say the word hello, she just starts waving. And the way she waves, she just opens and closes her fist. And if you just say good job, she'll just start clapping.
Nice.
She instantly starts clapping if anyone says good job. Yeah, good job, Andrew. Okay. So I can't talk about anything Daryl said just because that's the agreement we have. I will tell you this about the Atlanta thing. Let's set the Danny Ferry stuff aside for a moment. The owner, if you read what the owner is selling the team for and what is being called a racist email, to me, and I know this will shock people because I'm the guy that sees race and everything, that ain't a racist email. Writing a business letter that says, hey, a lot of our fans are scared of black people, and that hurts our bottom line. That ain't racist. Acknowledging other people's racism and potential issues is not racist. Like, the closest thing to racist that owner said was, in my anecdotal evidence, black people show up late for games and don't cheer as loud. Like, that doesn't even matter. Like, what that email said is, hey, we play hip-hop music, our cheerleaders are black, our crowd is really black, but the rich people in Atlanta are white. We love the rich people, and even though our stadium is very safe, the area around our stadium is safe, I read on message boards that people are talking about muggings that didn't happen because they're so afraid of black people. What can we do about this? Like, that's racist. Now, Danny Ferry saying Luol Deng, like most Africans, might sell counterfeit Gucci bags, which is essentially what he said. Now, that's a little bit racist. And I don't buy his explanation that he was just reading cold someone else's scouting report. Like, that's just absurd. Like, no, you were not. Like, stop saying that. So the Danny Ferry stuff, but, like, I get, there are real examples examples of damaging racism, and then there are soundbite racism. And the soundbite race, like, it is infuriating to me that people will look at what's going on in Atlanta, and people that try not to talk about race will be like, well, you know, this is bad. This is clearly racist, and things need to be done. That they will say that, but if you, to those same people, if you're like, you know, call me crazy, but I think if Mike Brown were white, he'd still be alive. They'd be like, you race baiter? There's never been any racial component to our criminal justice system. Black people and white people have always been treated equal under the law. It's in the Constitution. Like, you fucking moron. Like, goddammit. Like, with Donald Sterling. Donald Sterling can't own an NBA team. Why? Because he didn't want his girlfriend banging black dudes. Oh. And he made fun of Magic Johnson. Okay. Well, what about those 30 years of housing discrimination? You know, housing discrimination, which creates ghettos, which leads to crime, which leads to totally unequal opportunities, ruins lives, and changes the equal playing field. You know, that housing discrimination that his wife was his right-hand woman in. She is Clippers owner for life, number one fan. She gets 3 rings if we win a title. Like, our country is so fucked in understanding damaging racism and anecdotal stupid racism. And so the Hawks thing just doesn't even rate to me. Like, you want to talk about racism in sports? Be quiet, Anna Duke. Let's talk about how this entire Ray Rice discussion would be different, because we still, before that video came out yesterday, we had so many people being like, listen, I'm not saying that bitch deserved it, but that bitch probably deserved it. Let's talk about how different that discussion would be if the lady he drug out of the elevator was blonde and white, because then we can have an interesting discussion about violence against black women and why black women suffer domestic violence more than any other group in the world, and all these things. But nobody wants to have those discussions. They'd rather be like, Riley Cooper, drunk at a Kenny Chesney concert. Like, half the people at the Kenny Chesney concert aren't dropping the N-bomb left and right. Come on, what are we talking about here? Sorry, Kenny Chesney fans, I was kidding.
Hey, Nick, do you think there's any chance that this actually pushes Goodell out the door?
Only if they can prove he was lying.
Well, we saw your video today. I haven't watched Olbermann yet, but I imagine that he basically echoed your sentiment.
Oh, Olbermann's great. Did you see the thing I did?
Yeah, that's what I said. We watched your video.
Olbermann's is a little bit better. I gotta say, it's a little bit smarter, a little bit smoother. It's amazing how that works.
But did he have the crooked beard?
Yeah, you know, my beard wasn't perfectly done, but I have a crooked face. the reality is, I could have no facial hair and my face looks crooked. Goodell won't resign. And, you know, Bob Kraft came out today, he's like, you basically did the Browning, you're doing one hell of a job. Like I said, or he didn't, Roger Goodell's been great. Roger Goodell was hired to be a union buster, and it worked. And so as long as he's growing revenue, which I think anyone could do with the league right now, they're not going to get rid of him. What I do find so interesting about the Ray Rice, like, let's put critical thinking caps on for a moment. If we are to believe the league didn't see that video, which might be the most unbelievable, implausible, ridiculous thing I've ever heard, but let's say the league didn't see the video, then by upping Ray Rice's suspension, they are tacitly endorsing the exact line of thinking that got Stephen A. Smith suspended. Because we knew that he knocked her out on that elevator. We didn't need the video for that. What the NFL is saying, if they're going to claim they haven't seen the video, was that, well, yeah, we knew he, I mean, he told us he hit her and knocked her out, but I mean, we kind of thought she had it coming. But now that we've seen it, like, oh my God, she really didn't do anything. When we thought she, you know, was, we needed to talk about elements of provocation, well, in that case, it's two games. But now that we, and so, you know, that's the tricky part, is if you're going to say we knew she got knocked out by Ray Rice, who was two games, but now she's basically banned for life. Well, what you're saying is there are scenarios where knocking that woman out on the elevator are understandable. And there's one other part of the Ray Rice thing. Chris Mortensen, from a league source, had all the details months ago that she hit her head on the elevator, that she hit her with his left hand, you know what I mean, that there was spitting. He had it all. He also, in that same story, had that Janae was clearly attacking Ray. So some craven, diabolical, sadistic NFL lackey watched this video, gave Mortensen all the details, and then just invented the part where Janae Palmer is Solange Knowles. Just so it looks less bad for Ray Rice and therefore less bad for the league. It is so gross. And, I mean, you know, all Roger Goodell's done since he's been the commissioner is botched Spygate so badly that no one knows what was on those tapes and no one ever will because he burned them. Went before Congress in 2009, and said there's no evidence between concussions and long-term brain damage. Fox bowing gate so badly, his predecessor had to come in and clean up his mess. Total invention, lying about history when defending Washington's nickname, put replacement refs on the field, and now the Ray Rice. I mean, he is so incompetent. And he makes $44 million a year.
It's crazy just because I don't know anybody who really watches the NFL and likes Roger Goodell or thinks he's doing a good job. It's crazy.
Well, and
the owners.
Yeah, of course the owners. Related to the Ray Rice thing, I've read a little bit of stuff this morning because they were talking about basically the New Jersey State Police came out and said that, like, no, the NFL hadn't seen the video. And it's talking about, like, apparently the casino that this thing happened at is no longer open, and the jurisdiction on who should have had the security tapes, security in New Jersey or in this particular portion of Atlantic City is run by the state police. But the NFL asked, like, local PD.
You got it kind of wrong.
Okay.
Anything that happens on the casino floor is run by the New Jersey State Police. Anything that happens off the casino floor is Atlantic City Police Department. So here's what happened. The NFL came out today and said, hey, we asked the New Jersey State Police for the video. Conveniently saying they never asked the hotel for the video. The New Jersey State Police then came out and said they had no reason to ask us for the video. We were never part of this investigation.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL then came out and issued a new statement that said, we asked the New Jersey State Police and the Atlantic City Police Department for the video. No one gave it to us. Totally ignoring this fact. Ray Rice's lawyer had the video. That is an incontrovertible fact. Somebody with the cops and the prosecutor had the video as part of the discovery process. Before you cop any plea, you have to see the evidence against you. So Ray Rice's lawyer had the video. And Fidel Goodell could have easily said to Ray, you're staring at 16 games. We will negotiate it down. I want to talk to you. If your wife wants to talk to me, she can talk to me. And you are giving me every piece of evidence you have. So you can tell me what happened, but I just want to see what happened. And personally, I believe that you cannot convince me the NFL didn't see that video. Like, Peter King all of a sudden is wrong? Like, Peter King is nothing if not the league's mouthpiece. Peter King reported months ago the NFL seen it. Chris Mortensen said the NFL seen it. Jane McManus, who is ESPN's PR lead, said the league has seen it. Now all of a sudden the league hadn't seen it? Come on. How stupid are we, man?
It's a pretty crazy situation. I have no idea how it's going to end up crumbling. But, Nick, I think that's it for today. We will definitely talk to you next week. Greatly appreciate your time, as always, sir. And it sounds like we're going to be seeing you in right about a month.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Thank you guys for having me on. And if people did listen to that national show when it was on KC, I greatly appreciate it. the national show is over, actually, until the end of football season anyway, because I don't have many demands, but I don't work football Sunday, fellas. And, by the way, the national show isn't on football Sundays anyway, so that was kind of bullshit by me. But thank you. I'm glad I was able not to cry, but my baby crying a little bit means I fulfilled the promise, which was cursing and tears throughout.
Can I ask you one question before you go, actually?
Yeah.
Did you pair yourself with Ted Johnson knowing that he wasn't going to be there most weeks so that you could just take over the show?
No, that's super funny you said it. No. That was Ted and Josh Innes' show last year, and Josh left Houston to go to Philly, and they put me on the show. But I do enjoy doing solo radio, and it did work out well that Ted was very rarely there. But Ted's a great guy. Great guy, and I was lucky to work with him.
Excellent. Cool, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Keep fighting a good fight, Nick.
See ya.
Nick Wright, our man. One of my favorite people on the planet right there.
Hey-o. We're going to get to see his beautiful face.
That's awesome. We're going to have to try to plan a little something-something. For the Amateur Hour listeners, the Nick Wright fans. Apparently, those are all kind of one and the same now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the same diatribe.
Exactly.
I don't know what that word means.
You don't know what diatribe means?
No.
It basically means...
I don't know what half the words I say mean, but if you say them confidently, people will believe it.
Yeah. Well, man, it's just good to talk to him.
You're beaming right now.
I am. I just, like, I consider Nick a friend, not just like a friend of the show, and, you know, it's good to hear from him. It's been a long time, and now that he's coming home, like, are you kidding me? The last time that Nick was here,
uh-oh.
I want to say, do you remember what happened? But you don't.
Uh-oh.
We don't actually remember what happened. Nick's going away party was, like, one of the funnest times I've ever had in my life, so I imagine that Nick's welcome home party is going to be maybe not as awesome, but probably pretty awesome.
It was 2.5 years ago, and I haven't been that drunk since. I'll just say that.
It was a great night. Thanks again to Nick Wright from CBS in Houston. Obviously, you guys know that. I don't really need to give Nick any more introductions.
You should thank us.
We will be back later in the week with our Around the NFL show, the first installment of the year. And obviously, we'll see you Sunday for postgame. They're at Pride. Sign up for FanDuel. Use the promo code HPKC if you are a new person. And if not, well, then just sign up and I'll take your money. This has been Amateur Hour, and this is the intro song to the Boondocks that, you know, everybody should know from Nick Wright.
Ooh.
But I don't have his Apple beep 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 that.
Yep. Uh-huh. I remember it.
Maybe that's just in
there. It's part of the song.
Holy crap. There you go. Yeah, right there.
Man, I always figured that was Nick's doing.
Yeah. Look at that. Huh. Learn something new every day.
I like how you call it out as it happens.
Yeah. Yeah, there it is.
That is the song. That is not me.
Fine.
That is not me and my fancy Mac.
Fucking Mac people. My timeline went from like people talking about the Chiefs to like
iPhone.
And exclusively iPhone.
I'm not an iPhone dork. I really have an iPhone. I don't. I don't care what's...
I didn't ask him about Arthur Brown at all. I texted him about Arthur Brown, but I didn't ask him about Arthur Brown.
I don't think it's that important.
Well, I mean, it's just a matter of, like, the Ravens literally, like...
Well, I'll talk about it if he's on the trading block. But we have no idea if we're interested whatsoever.
Yeah, they said that they hadn't had any discussions with any teams, and I'm sure that's because everybody's like, well, he was a second-round draft pick last year, so...
It's like the drafting of a specific player. It's just like, I'm not gonna...
I think we are maybe the two highest people.
Yeah.
Hey, I really enjoyed that.